Well, Leonard Lopecha's latest book club selection is The Tiger's Wife by Taya Albrecht, which won the Orange Prize and was named one of the 10 best books of 2011 by the New York Times. It tells the story of a young doctor coming to terms with the death of her grandfather, and it's a richly layered tale that mixes the realities of grief and war with mythology, folklore, and mystery. It's published by Random House, and I'm very pleased it has brought Taya Albrecht to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
I hope our listeners have been reading the book. If you have and you want to participate in this conversation, you can leave your questions and comments on our show page at WNYC.org, or you can call us at 212-433-9692, and we'll get to some of those comments and calls as the show progresses. Taya, you were born in Serbia when it was still part of Yugoslavia?
That's right, yeah.
The book seems as if it's set there, and the place makes you the names you give, Saribor, Galena, Brejavina, aren't real places, but they sound like they could be in some part of the former Yugoslavia. Why weren't you more specific about it? Why did you choose to be so unspecific about the setting?
You know, I wanted to capture the essence of the conflict in the Balkans and stay away from the political and historical particulars that a lot of people are familiar from, you know, from the war in the early 90s. And I felt like if I was specific and true to the place, I would be anchored to a particular kind of history and to a particular kind of story. And I just wanted to deal with the human element.
Well, the descriptions of the places you write about are really vivid. So I assume that you were basing them, at least to some degree, on real places.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. And I've been going back since 2003, and I feel very connected to different parts of the former Yugoslavia where I've been. And it's just incredible. And I think that there's a real essence in the land that is very telling of what the people are like and what their lives are like as well. So I think it's a huge aspect of life there and of the book as well.
Well, when you refer to the city, but don't name it, I still thought Belgrade.
I'd say that's pretty accurate.
You left Yugoslavia when you were quite young. And lived in a number of places before you came to the United States.
That's
but,
right. Yeah.
Cairo, where else?
In Cyprus as well, in Limassol. We were a nomadic kind of family.
But you arrived here in time to have an American accent completely.
I did, yeah. And I'm a total mimic. And I grew up speaking like the Queen's English with a proper British accent. So whenever I'm around British people, I sort of like fall into it again, and people think I'm making fun of them. It's embarrassing.
Could you have written this in any language but English?
No, absolutely not. I can read Serbo-Croatian and I speak it, I'm fluent, but I don't have as good a grasp of grammar and of the richness of it as I do with English.
Jeff from Greenpoint left this question on our show page. Maps and the way borders can change is a key part of the novel. Can you please discuss how geography shapes and reshapes people and identity?
Yeah, I think that that's a great question and a huge part of the Balkan conflict. I think that, from my understanding of it, a lot of the tensions arose from map shifting and empire entrance, you know, from centuries gone by. It's very frustrating. It must be very frustrating to a people to be part of one culture and then, as a result of a treaty or a conflict that they have no say in, to be part of another.
So you're part of the Ottoman Empire, then you're part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Yeah, exactly. And you have no say in it, you know, I think that, you know, then certain ways of life are imposed on your identity. And I think that it creates a kind of, mental friction within itself.
One of the things that makes this story so powerful is that you don't spell everything out, particularly when you write about the repercussions of the war and the divisions among people. Can you explain that approach, how you avoided explaining too much? Was that your intention from the start?
It was. It was one of the few intentions that I actually kept a hold on as I wrote the novel. I'm terrified of over-explaining. And as a reader, I love stories that engage me on a sort of interactive level. I love being able to bring sort of whatever it is that I'm going through in my own life to the story and you know, feel that it applies to me in whatever way it applies. So I think that as a writer that I sort of went that way too.
Well, every reader is partially the writer of the book.
Exactly.
Because we are all picturing people in our minds, and
exactly.
We're not picturing the same people that the author pictured.
Yes, yeah.
Or unless it's very specific about 42nd Street, we don't picture the same place either. I'm sure there are some listeners who haven't read the book. Can you tell us a little bit about how the war has affected the lives of your characters? Natalia, for example.
Yes. So Natalia is a doctor who in the post-war unnamed province of the Balkans is on a mission of mercy to an orphanage across the border. It's a new border. It's sort of a goodwill kind of effort in which she's trying to, bridge the tension by inoculating orphans. And she realizes that her grandfather has died while she's been away under mysterious circumstances.
He's also a doctor.
Exactly, yeah.
So how did all of this affect him? Her grandfather.
I think that her grandfather is struggling to realize that his identity and his past is rooted in stories that belong to a place that no longer exists.
But you also have to wonder, I've always thought about this in connection with the former Yugoslavia, but also Rwanda, other places, how people recover from civil wars like this, in which there was ethnic cleansing and mass murders of civilians, including people who might have been your friends, people you might have gone to school with.
I think that it's that's the first thing that anyone from back home talks about when they're asked, sort of how they deal with it and what they think about. And I think that, this idea of, we were schoolmates, and then we were on opposite ends of the line. And
I was shooting at that
and
person.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that story is, or at least in my view, and in the book as well, story and the way those experiences are reinterpreted after the fact has a lot to do with moving forward, whether you can find any kind of hopeful narrative in what's happened. It does a lot to reframe it for future generations. And that's why I think, the way I've received word of the war has been through people who had something to say about what happened to them and how they came through it.
My guest is Tea Abrecht, whose novel, The Tiger's Wife, was a New York Times bestseller when it was released in hardcover. It's now available in paperback from Random House. This is a very ambitious novel. How old were you when you began writing it?
I was about, I think it was 21 going on 22.
Had you been writing short stories?
I had, yeah. I was at Cornell for my MFA. I had sort of, I had shut myself off into this isolated place to make a go of being a writer. My grandfather had just died, and I was, going through an experience like that, and something happened.
Well, there are stories within the story here. So were some of them written like short stories?
Not beforehand. The Tiger's Wife segment was written as a short story, and it failed miserably. It was just terrible. But that's where the rest of the novel came from. All the elements of the Tiger's Wife section of the novel were in that original short story.
So a tiger's what you began with?
Yes.
Because animals play a major role in the story. Not only the tigers of the title, but also an elephant that's escaped from the zoo, a dog who is the subject of paintings by its owners and neighbors' children. Do you have a strong connection to animals?
I do. I used to go to zoos a lot as a child, and wherever we moved, we'd be at the zoo within the first week of moving there. I think that I wasn't aware of how much I was using animals, not just in this novel, but in the rest of my work as well. It's sort of a revelation to me. I think that the answer for why is that there's an emotional honesty to the way animals respond to external pressures that just isn't there in humans. We've got sort of social responses that are conditioned towards certain things. And I think that animals don't react that way. And there's a kind of
Well, they're hardwired to do certain things.
Exactly, yeah.
And but the tiger of your grandfather's story is such a sympathetic character. He seems to embody so much emotion, pain, loss, loneliness. I'm assuming you saw him as being a symbol as well.
You know, I don't know that I get asked that occasionally, and I don't know that I don't know that I did. I think that I was very wrapped up in the indulgence of writing a character like that. And that's sort of it was such a, like, the kid in me wanted to write about a tiger.
Well, in the same way that you wanted these other characters, even the characters who on some level could be seen as villainous,
yeah.
you wanted us to understand their backstories and give us the complete sense of who they are.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that that has a lot to do with going back to the war and this idea of you know, who is the person on the other side, and what's their story. And I think that was sort of naturally had to be part of the novel, because when I was writing it the other way, it was overly simplistic.
Well, even the butcher, Luca, who beats his deaf-mute wife, has a backstory that helps the reader at least understand his rage a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that it excuses his behavior in any way. So is that what you did? You thought, well, what's the backstory of each one of these people?
I did.
Can I make them as complete as possible?
Yeah, and for Luca, it started with Luca because he was just this terrible villain, you know, and the way I approached it in writing was I wrote, he is a terrible villain, you know, and it just failed. And then I wrote his story to explain to myself why he was the way he was, and it became part of the novel.
There are the kinds of myths and folktales that you tell in this book, the story of the tiger's wife and of, is it Darisha?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Who seems to be a half man and a half bear, based on any stories you heard growing up or encountered in your life?
The Deathless Man is based on a German and Slavic folktale called Godfather Death. And other titles. but everyone else is sort of a mishmash, I think, of folktale archetypes. There's elements of Beauty and the Beast in the relationship between the girl and the tiger. And there's folktale elements in it that I didn't realize were there until afterwards, like a pattern of threes, and, you know, people are given challenges, and after I finished, it's like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was doing this. But
well, obviously you're drawn to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Didn't you once go hunting for vampires for a Harper's Magazine?
I did. It exerted a tremendous amount of influence on the book in the end. But it was, yeah, we went, I went back to Serbia and Croatia, and with my friend went from door to door in these places that were historically linked to vampires, and ask people about them.
Let's talk a bit about the Deathless Man. The grandfather tells Natalia about him a number of times over his life. Does Natalia believe the story?
I think that is one of the main issues of the book. I think that the question of Natalia is in the process of trying to decide, as a result of her grandfather's death, whether or not she believes in that story,
the
tiger's wife story. And I think that the stories that you choose to believe about people you love, you know, they change the way your outlook is on life from here on out.
Well, it brings a kind of magic to her grandfather's life.
Yeah.
And it introduces her to a world in which there's magic. Lynn from Edison, New Jersey writes, love the book and the style of writing, and am willing to suspend realism in literature. Nevertheless, I keep asking myself, how did the tiger's wife get pregnant? Is that too shallow a question? I hope not. She wrote.
It's not too shallow a question at all. I think that it's really, you know, certain readers have come up to me and said, it's the tiger's baby, right? Certain readers have come up and said, is it, you know, it's her husband's baby, isn't it? The result of some other encounter. Someone even asked me if it was the growth of village lies and village perceptions that was, you know, growing as, you know, in her as it grew without. So I think that there's a lot of ways to go with that.
Well, it sounds to me like there are an awful lot of postdoctoral or postgrad theses that are in the works here. You could have people telling you what you actually intended for years to come. Throughout the book, Natalia's grandfather carries a copy of The Jungle Book in his pocket. Are there parallels between your story and Kipling's story?
I think that the world of animals is being a sort of a moral place, and you know, a place where there's an absolute good and an absolute evil, but things just happen nevertheless, is something that the books share. The Jungle Book was certainly a huge part of my upbringing. I wasn't raised with the colonialist issues with Kipling that I realized were part of sort of the Western view of him.
So you weren't aware of that?
I was not aware of that.
It was just
a
book about magical stories.
Exactly, yeah. It was a book about, you know, animals and what they have to say. And, you know, I grew up, it was the first book I read in Serbo-Croatian and then the first book I read in English as well. So it was a huge part of my childhood. I was blithely unaware.
Natalia and her mother live with her grandparents. This book isn't really autobiographical, but I assume that there are certain elements that you've drawn from your own life.
There are, and they happened sort of inadvertently. A lot of writers I know told me, in your first book, you're going to write about your childhood, just accept it. It's going to happen, regardless of what you think you may know. And that came about in strange ways in this book. I think that this book ended up being about an emotional honesty and writing what you know from an emotional standpoint, rather than you know, this is what happened to our family, because, you know, my grandfather was not a doctor. He was an aeronautical engineer.
My guest is Taya Abrecht, who's the Tiger's wife. Is the subject of this month's Leonard LoPage Show book club. We invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Is there some tension between Natalia, a doctor, and some of the superstitions and folk remedies and general ignorance or distrust of modern medicine that you write about here?
There is, and that was one of the reasons why I knew from the beginning that the characters had to be doctors. I have a friend in Serbia with whom I reconnected after going back, who was a medical student while I was writing this book, and she had lots to say about the difficulties she had in navigating that line between reality and myth, and her frustrations with trying to, you know, bring people over to her side when going the other way might actually kill them. It became, you know, she's the person on the cusp of both worlds, and it's also about her her trying to realize the benefit of both as opposed to just one.
Because you come out of a culture and then you commit yourself to another culture, it's hard. Some people just reject the old culture, but if you're smart, you'll will also understand how the old culture enriches your life.
Exactly, and how it's already shaped you, whether you think you can get away from it or not.
In this case, you have a number of strands of stories here, and you had to figure out different voices, didn't you?
Yes.
So that's something just came naturally with the story you were telling?
Oh, God, no. So much of it was trial and error. And I think that the finding of a particular voice is the part of the writing process that stumps me the most and is the part where I'm most likely to get stalled. If it's not working, it won't go anywhere. So it's a long process.
Well, one of my listeners, Maripos from New York City, was wondering about how you research the information you use in constructing this story, such as the mythology, the war, being a doctor in a war-torn country, crossing borders.
Well, I was lucky in that much of this, you know, was pulled from my life before the war, and then people were very willing to talk about their experiences of the war. My friend, the doctor, served as you know, the sounding board for all the medical stuff, which may or may not still be accurate. But I think that
it was accurate at the time.
Oh, that's right. thank you. it's comforting. I think that you know, in terms of research for writing, I've learned in the writing of this book that it's the stuff that's necessary for me to know in order to be able to write it doesn't necessarily have to be told to the reader. The author has to have a base of knowledge, but that doesn't mean that this gives you the cause now to give a huge info dump to everybody, because...
And we have seen those kinds of novels as well. I did the research, and you're going to...
Exactly.
You're going to suffer through it. Along these lines, David from Westfield writes, "I'm struck by Miss Abrex's preternatural wisdom and eloquence, almost as though her grandfather occupies her very being. Can the writing of this phenomenal fable have felt like an out-of-body experience for her?"
You know, thank you for that comment. Thank you. There are certainly parts of the writing process that I don't remember very clearly. Like, I couldn't tell you where I was when I wrote the section on Darisha the Bear. A lot of this has to do with the fact that the novel was written mostly at night, but I think that when writing is going really, really well, at least for me personally, you enter a kind of trance-like state, and hours have gone by. You don't realize, how much you've departed from everything that's really around you. So in that sense,
Well, he also wonders about speaking English as a second or third language. Some pretty great stylists have actually come out of Slavic languages, like Conrad and Nabokov. Do you think that that's had that has enriched your English?
I think it has, and I feel very, very lucky that it has. It's sort of changed the relationship that I have to the English language. It's a very visual relationship. I pick words sometimes because of the way they look. I know that sounds so bizarre, but it is. I like consonants that drop below the line of the lowercase letters.
You like G's and Y's.
G's and Y's, exactly.
J's.
Yes. I also sometimes spend hours groping around for, like, I'll remember the word in Serbo-Croatian and spend hours groping for it in English, only to be frustrated.
A listener writes, "There's a scene in which Natalia's teacher gets a hold of a black market lung for her students to dissect during the war when she couldn't get supplies like that. Did people tell you stories about those kinds of incidents?"
People did, not with lungs specifically. The lung scene was actually taken from culled together from an experience that I had in Cairo with a biology lesson of a similar nature. But people did, people talked about contraband a lot. Yeah.
Much has been made of how young you are. You were just 24 when you were chosen as one of the New Yorkers 20 under 40 in their summer fiction issue. So how old were you when you started writing? I'm not talking about this book.
Oh, I was really young. I was about 8. We were living in Cyprus, and I wanted to play with my mom's new computer. And I couldn't do that unless I was doing something productive. So I wrote a short story about a goat who has a really bad day. And said
Animals again.
I know, it all started with that one goat. And said to my mom, "I'm going to be a writer." And it was a joke for a while. And then before I knew it, I was in college for creative writing.
Well, obviously, it satisfies a certain need in you. And I wonder, because often writers are people who feel like they don't have one home.
That's true.
There are so many emigre writers. And then there are so many writers who choose to travel. Oh, yesterday we were talking about Graham Greene with Pico Iyer, and the fact that they just never settle down.
I think that, that must have a lot to do with it. And a lot of writers I know are on the move all the time. And I don't know if it's just this incredible need to... I have a need to tell stories. I do. And I think that it also has to do with, I've experienced this cool thing elsewhere, and I want to incorporate it in some way in a story I'm telling. And it's just, wanting to assemble your experiences and other people's experiences and then produce something.
Well, you seem to be rather level-headed, so maybe I shouldn't worry about you as much as some of the writers we've seen in the past who've had this kind of success so early. It just seems to throw them off.
Oh, God. Well, I think that, there's a part of it that's quite terrifying. There's the fact that success is something that you really have no control over. I wrote the book.
But people telling you you're brilliant.
It's very nice of them, and I don't buy it. I think that I was also raised incredibly superstitious. Like, my grandmother keeps scissors under the bed, and so there's like this standing belief in my family, like, something good's happened. Watch yourself when you leave the house today, It's been a pretty weird year for me in terms of that. I have this, this karmic deficit now.
What does scissors under the bed do?
Oh, they cut evil in half if it comes for you in the night. Yeah.
I'll have to remember that. Dig up the scissors.
Very useful, yeah.
Tea Albrecht is the youngest ever winner of the Orange Prize for her novel, The Tiger's Wife, which is now in paperback from Random House. I'm assuming there's another book in the works or short stories?
There is. There have been a couple of short stories, which I'm really excited about because I think that it's a good transition away from this book and towards the next one. And the next one's taken, you know, it was stalled for a while, but I think that I've finally found something that I can latch onto with some integrity. So I'm very excited about it.
And what's the kind of thing that would allow you to latch onto something?
I think that it's what happened with The Tiger's Wife was that, you know, I had my lifetime of growing up, and then my grandfather died, and there was a real emotional need to write about a particular kind of something.
Thank you so much for being on our Leonard Lopate Book Club today.
Thank you for having me.